Well, hello everyone and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and with a great group of people here today and a great show. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there.
Gobble, gobble.
I know. Martha can say that. She knows about turkeys.
I do.
Is that really what they say?
Well, yes, it is actually. Mm-hmm. But did you know the male turkeys talk more than the female turkeys?
Really?
Actually, no. It's the other way around. It's like humans.
Oh, the females do.
Yeah. So you have to come visit sometime.
I know.
So
the females have like 10,000 gobbles a day.
Yes.
The males are like 2,200 gobbles a day.
Yeah, the male turkeys only speak when spoken to.
Oh,
it's true. Awesome. It's true.
Wow. So. And Minnesotan turkeys are even more reserved. So
there's
like total silence on Martha's farm. It's like the Scandinavian ones. So, you know, that's one of my Thanksgiving traditions is I call up my family members, the ones I'm not celebrating Thanksgiving with, and I do a turkey call. And it goes kind of like.
So, that's good.
Isn't that close? I know. So I just did it all for you.
There's a turkey right here in the studio.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I wasn't going to say anything.
And we wonder why I'm not married, people. I mean, hello, with these kind of skills. I'm just saying. So
you got mad turkey
anyway,
skills.
Very. And I was going to say a very fun show for you, but it's not. It's just not this week. So. We're going to be talking about breakups and rejection. Oh, but you know what? We're going to have something to be thankful for in the midst of it. So we're going to tie it in.
Could be some turkeys in there.
Exactly. If you are dating a turkey and you have been rejected by one, then this show is for you. So later on in the show, we'll be talking to Jackie Johnson. She is the author of When Love Ends and the Ice Cream Carton is Empty. She's going to answer our inbox question on basically getting over a breakup and how to deal with that, which is the subject of her book. So she should know something. And then our culture segment will actually be fun. We're going to talk to Dominic Bally. He is a reggae / funk / pop / everything artist. And I have to laugh because when he came through, Martha was like, "You probably want to interview him, don't you?" And I was like, "Yeah." So,
come on.
And he has dreadlocks, so I love him. So anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. Another great Thanksgiving theme. Do you think any of the pilgrims had dreadlocks?
I do not.
Okay.
Not possible.
Probably not.
Cool hats, but no dreads.
Okay. Well, we're just, whatever.
I've seen many animated pictures of the pilgrims without dreads. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll see. Maybe we can change that. We'll see what we can do. But for a roundtable, we are going to, as I alluded to, talk about rejection, specifically in relationships. And of course, when I thought of rejection, I thought of our current panel. So to my right is Martha. Martha.
Am I included in that?
Well,
I'm just a staple here.
Well, let's just act like you had to be here. You know, we won't make you feel bad.
Yes.
We don't want to make Martha feel rejected. But Adam Holtz is here as well. Adam, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Fresh off the heels of his I Asked 34 People to
That's
Date
right.
Me post. So,
shot down in a blaze of glory.
A couple months ago. So yes, bless his heart. And Andrew Hess is back.
Hey, good to be
Andrew,
here.
Andrew, how in the world could you have ever been rejected?
I don't know, but we'll find out.
We will certainly find out. Okay. Well, we hear when we go through breakups or even not even a specific breakup, when you like someone, you hope that they like you back, it's such a dance and it's so crazy and everyone just gets crazy about it and you put your hopes in something and it doesn't work out. And of course, the common platitude that you hear when whether you're dating someone or you're really interested in someone and they're not reciprocating is either, well, you know, don't worry because you dodged a bullet, or it's okay, there's someone better out there, or you hear all this stuff. And at the time, it doesn't really seem to help. So you kind of have to get some distance and space from that in order to appreciate it. But we are going to talk about the different facets of rejection, specifically in relation to romantic relationships today. And I just want to start by figuring out, you know, whether we've experienced rejection or whatever, what are just some general feelings that come about, like when you were interested in someone, or maybe you've gone out with someone once or twice, or whatever the scenario is, did you go into it expecting that it would work out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've had some different experiences where I had to deal with rejection. Probably the worst was in high school, but I think that for me, I would probably categorize most of my reaction in kind of defensive frame. It's kind of the way I defend myself from the pain of, oh, there must be something wrong with me. And so you, a lot of times I'll feel the feeling of anger, like angry, like how dare you do that, or how dare you reject me. But then also kind of the, I'll turn it and say, well, there must be something wrong with them. You know, that I mean, and I'm not saying that
that's clearly not, they can't see what a great guy you are.
Yeah, that's not advice. That's just kind of me being honest, is just kind of, but trying to push back. And I think guys tend to do that a little bit, is to say, man, like it can't be me. It must be you, mm-hmm. You know? And so I think going all the way back to the, kind of some of those early relationships I had in high school, when I look at it, there was that. And then I think there's also, you kind of coach yourself through it and just say, there's probably somebody better for me out there. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. That you kind of move from, you process that moment, but then you recognize, you know, there's something better out there. And so I'm just going to keep my head up and just kind of, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. Now, are you saying that happened, like, would that happen regardless of the length of the relationship? Like, you went out with someone a few times and you still felt like, oh my goodness, why are they rejecting me? Or were these longer term relationships?
The one in high school was a longer term relationship. I think we dated for about 6 months, and then she was going on a mission trip and wanted to kind of back off the commitment so that she could be free to, like, pursue this other guy that was going on the trip with her. And that was very painful. And I think, in being in high school, there were a lot of things about the relationship that I kind of struggled with and didn't lead well. And so I think in that place, that was a time where I was initially very angry. And then, you know, after a while, she had come back to me and said, hey, let's be friends, you know. And I, you know, part of the way I dealt with it was, no, I don't want to be friends. Like, I don't want to be friends with you. And I remember her being very upset about that. And I always thought that was bizarre. Like, why do you want to be friends with me?
You rejected me.
Yeah, you rejected me. What's up with this? Let's save friendship.
Now it's my turn.
Yeah. So, but I mean, and I learned a lot through that. And I was very immature at that time. I mean, and as far as managing that relationship and understanding, I didn't guard my heart very well in that. So I think for me, the lesson out of that I learned was to guard my heart. When I look, you know, maybe in the last couple of years, times that I've been rejected, it hasn't been nearly as painful because I've learned to guard my heart. You know, I've gone into relationships without high expectations on the front end. And so while you're hopeful, like, oh, I hope this goes somewhere, I hope this develops, you also don't let your heart, you know, you don't let your heart get too attached too quickly. So I think I've kind of seen in my own journey, you know, which is all the more reason to not date so much when you're in high school.
All right. Who else?
You know, with regard to the emotions, I find that, there's just a whole range of emotions that you can feel almost simultaneously. And as you referenced earlier, I recently wrote about a stretch from my senior year in college where I went 0 for 7 my senior year. That was really a bad year because I'm like, I'm graduating. I've got to make this work right now. From then until I was 34, I think I got shot down 34 times. So, and then I, you know, try again, and eventually something works. But I think that there's a whole constellation of emotions. I think it's disorienting. I think it's disappointing. For me, anyway, it really created a lot of shame, and I had to work through self-deprecation. I think, unlike Andrew, I beat myself up pretty badly for not being good enough. And I think there were some pretty basic mistakes that I was making repeatedly. And I found that with one stretch where I had several really bad rejections after two or three dates with somebody, it was sort of like post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, it's like I'm back in Nam, I'm in the forest, and I'm having flashbacks. And it's just, I found that there was sort of a cumulative effect if you went through several rejections in short order and didn't process them. You know, every time you got shot down, it was not only that relationship, it was the last three times too. And that can just snowball to a really bad place too. Mm-hmm. And those were experiences I had with rejection in my 30s. And so I think in some ways, I wonder if it's easier to bounce back when you're younger, and each time you go through the process and end up at a place of rejection, it adds another layer potentially. I don't think it has to, but I think it makes the processing more difficult because you continue to process, why does this keep happening to me? You know, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. So that's hard.
Hmm. Are you talking about there was 34, like, will you go out to this movie with me and they said no, or was it different lengths of...
It was different lengths. I think most of those were fairly short order, you know, 1-3 date kind of things. And in the midst of that, the one absolutely heart-wrenching relationship was a woman I got to know shortly after I moved to Colorado Springs when I was 23, met her at church, really fell quickly for her, spent about 9 months developing a friendship, got to a point where I was willing to take the risk of pursuing her. I mean, I vividly remember the date in January of 1996 when we went to a movie and talked about the relationship afterwards. And she knew that I was interested. She valued our friendship. And she was trying to sort through whether she was going to be able to get there. And she had finally decided that she wasn't going to. And, you know, by the time we were done, she was crying. I'm, you know, we're in Village Inn eating hamburgers. And it's just like the biggest public boohoo fest you've ever seen. And, you know, I went home and cried for 2 days straight. And then I don't know whether I want to recommend what happened next. I was able to accept her no. I didn't push past that. I wanted to respect that. And we were able to develop a much deeper friendship, and I was still very much in love with her, even knowing this wasn't going to go anywhere. And so we had probably 6 months to a year of sort of weirdness of, you know, trying to figure out what this looks like. But I really did value her friendship, and we did get to a place where our friendship was one of the best friendships I've ever had. And yet it often, you know, I would still feel these things, and I knew she didn't feel them, and I knew it wasn't right to keep sort of revisiting something that she had said no to. And so that was in the midst of that, just sort of this ongoing multi-year trauma that in some ways I feel like God still redeemed and something really good came of it in the end. So that would be sort of a long-term experience. It wasn't, we didn't date, but there was certainly rejection involved.
I had probably the opposite experience that you did, Adam, in that I was in a relationship and it wasn't even that long term and the guy proposed and wow. I basically wasn't ready to marry him. So I had to just say, no, I'm not ready. And he went from, you know, basically proposing and saying, I love you and want to spend the rest of my life with you, to me saying, I need more time, to basically about 2 weeks later, telling me, okay, yeah, forget it. And so just kind of like tossing it all aside. And I thought we would still continue dating and continue working on it. And that for me was a big rejection. Like, yeah. I'm not, to me, that said, you're not worth waiting for and you're not worth fighting for. Yeah. And it was just like, bam, I'm going to walk. And so that for me was a huge season of feeling rejected in the sense of, wow, you know, I thought that this was something that you could sit down and communicate about and work through and stuff like that. But obviously he's just going to chuck it. And so, I did a short season of counseling after that stint because I brought a lot of that on myself and saying, what is wrong with me? Could I just not communicate enough? Could I just not share where I was? Did I make a wrong decision? That kind of stuff. And so I had to realize, you know, that a lot of that had to be worked through on a number of different levels. So,
and, you know, I don't know that there's any one right path for, you know, a relationship that doesn't work out. You know, some people advocate you do a clean break. You walk away from it. You don't try to make it something else, even though none of us wants to be a friend after something doesn't work out. I guess I've had a couple of those relationships where I had really rich, you know, experiences with somebody that it didn't go in the romantic direction. And so I think it's important to really talk to God a lot during that. And I think, as you just illustrated, talking with other people, because I think one of the things that happens when a relationship doesn't work out is our perspective is really distorted. Our perspective on ourself, on romance, on hope, on God. And sometimes we just need somebody else to help us think through, you know, here's where you're thinking clearly and here's where you're a wreck and you could probably use some work.
Yeah. One thing that I've definitely noticed for women is that we tend to, and it seems like more than guys, need closure. Like, we need this whole explanation for everything that happened, and we just can't get beyond it until we have this closure, and we'll fight for it, you know? And then it's, you know, it's a delicate balance, because you can get crazy. You can get crazy going for closure. And one of the best things I've ever heard is from one of my friends, and he told me, he said, when he went through a relationship, he specifically told the girl, he said, you know what? And he had ended it. And he said, I'm going to give you 2 weeks, he said. And in this 2 weeks, you can ask me anything you want. I'll meet with you. I'll talk with you. I'll share feelings. I'll do whatever I want. But then after this 2 weeks, it needs to end and we both need to move on. And I thought that was just really healthy. It gave her an understanding of what she had before her. It gave her the time, the access to him, the space to ask questions.
And some boundaries.
Yeah, and some boundaries. But then to say, no, you're not going to be like texting me 3 months from now and you're not going to bring this up again and you're not going to, you know, try to revive something. And so I just thought that was a good approach to it.
And, you know, I think that you can have good breakups and bad breakups, and it's hard to do it right because you're just so discombobulated emotionally that it's hard to make sense of it. But I think it's important to try to do it well because you don't know what the ramifications of that are going to be down the road. I had one serious relationship where we were moving towards marriage, and the first part of the relationship moved pretty quickly and I was pretty excited. And then over a short period of time that included a multi-day road trip to meet both sets of parents, it was a clarifying experience. And I realized, I don't think this is going to work. And at that point, I wasn't the rejectee. I was the one feeling like I had to pull out of the relationship. And I did that. And interestingly, this is a sidebar in terms of the whole God's will. How do you know where God's at in it? As I prayed, I felt like God said very, very clearly to me, the choice is yours. There are some hard things here. If you choose to get married, I will help you deal with them. If you choose not to get married, I'll help both of you and I'll, you know, redeem the situation. And I felt like he was more concerned with how I moved forward than what the decision was. And after I broke things off, we had, you know, we actually had some distance for a while and then we connected occasionally, you know, maybe had a meal once a month and just caught up on how things were going. And then she met a guy and he was in the Air Force. She moved to Europe and I'm like, I'm never going to see her again. And which was fine at that point, you know, it's go your separate ways. Well, a couple years later, I get married. I'm in church and there they are in church. They'd moved back to town and they now sit in the same row with us at church. And I sometimes marvel at how weird it is, but I was glad that it ended well because that enabled us to have, you know, a very different relationship years later on the other side of things. So it's kind of a tangent, but I think it's important to end things well because you never know what might happen in the future.
And I think to recognize, and this is something I realized in mine and a couple other relationships that had died in the past, that in addition to wanting that closure, I also wanted to be vindicated. And I felt like I wanted them to know that they were wrong and that they were, that everything, you know, everything that they had done wrong in the relationship, I wanted to make sure that they knew. And I felt like they didn't know. And that totally upset me. And I was just like, no, I mean, not that it was like, you need to pay for it, but you at least need to acknowledge it. And when someone is just like, oh my goodness, okay, this is just for the best, whatever. And then I'm here just like broken, you know, I'm like, that is not okay. And so,
because none of us like to be sold short and feel like we never even got a chance to show who we were.
And I just remember God so specifically telling me one night, Lisa, I am your advocate. I am your judge. I know the truth in this whole situation and you need to let go of this and let me handle it. And it was very liberating for me to realize that I don't need to have control over this person, over this situation, over what's happening here. I just felt that was really important for me because now I think in this day and age, and we'll probably, we'll transition into talking about this a little bit. Now we have Facebook, we have all these ways to just like cyber stalk people past the relationship.
More ways to get rejected than ever.
in a number of different mediums. And and it just feels like, you know, you can kind of hold on to those connections, you can manipulate a situation. It's just all kinds of craziness. And sometimes God's just telling us, no, you really need to let go and walk away. And you need to be willing to give that space to that person into this situation. So, okay, so it's not, you know, as if it's not bad enough to actually be in a relationship and get rejected. We can just get rejected from relationships we're not in. We can get rejected in relationships that we think we're in, but apparently we're not.
They didn't have their relationship status bar on their Facebook page, so it doesn't count.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. They haven't agreed to change their relationship status, and we think it's time. Oh, my goodness. There's so much to deal with in that. And I think it is, you know, in this age of dating, and now you have, you know, you can flat out ask someone out, or you can get to know someone, you know, you're going to be IMing with people. people. You're going to be doing online dating. Mm-hmm. And there are just all kinds of quagmires that can crop up there. So let's talk about any experience there. I'm sure we'll have some more recent ones cropping up here as far as just something where you felt, oh, this is not okay. This is a feeling of rejection that I'm experiencing in some sense, even if you don't know if you feel it's legitimate or not.
Yeah, I've had a lot of times where I'll go on one date, and then after that date, you kind of can sense, okay, that person's not interested, or I'm not interested, and that's just, it's an awkward place to be. And I've actually gone back and forth with some of my guy friends. You know, if you ask a girl out and take her out once or twice, and you know somebody's not interested, do you have to, you know, have a DTR to say this isn't going anywhere? And I have some friends who are pretty adamant you have to. And speaking to the closure issue, like that, yeah, especially for women, they mm-hmm. want to know where things are going, and that just slipping away isn't a good thing to do. And mm-hmm. I've probably erred on both sides of that, yeah. You know, but because I think I always feel like you're kind of rubbing their face in it if you, like, that's just my perception that if you say, hey, I just wanted to let you know that this isn't headed anywhere. I mean, it's just kind of like, oh, great. Like, thanks for caring.
In case you hadn't noticed my nonverbals and my not returning your calls and that sort of thing.
And so, but I do think there's, like, especially the longer you spend being intentional with that person, the more it is important to just speak clearly. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times guys just assume, oh, she'll figure it out, or she knows.
No, what we're saying is you can tell that after one cup of coffee. Basically, you're just saying I'm not hot. Okay. That is what you're saying. So just tell me straight up, because, oh yeah, like, it's not going anywhere. Okay.
Well, and I will add that it can be sheer agony to not know what's going on. Of, like, mm-hmm. if you have started a pattern of, if it's emailing or calling or texting, or even have been on a date or two, just say it. If this isn't going anywhere, let us move mm-hmm. on. Otherwise, we're sitting there wondering.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think part of it is just the principle of respect. I think clarity is helpful. I think clarity can feel harsh in the moment, but I have one friend in particular who's pursued a number of women who simply stopped responding. You know, they don't pick up the phone, they don't answer emails. And it's like, well, it's clear that they don't want to go forward. They are communicating. But I think if somebody has enough courage to pursue intentionally, that's deserving of, you know, a respectful and polite, hey, I don't think this is going to go anywhere. Thanks for thinking of me. You know, mm-hmm. But I think it's hard. None of us want to intentionally hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm. But in trying to sort of avoid that, sometimes I think we end up inflicting more damage than if we were just able to clearly and politely and respectfully say, seems like this is what's going on, and here's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Even though it's hard and it's awkward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that even after, like, a first date, it's, you can tell the difference between, oh, we've got to do this again, or can I call you, or whatever, to just someone ending it by saying, well, it was really great to meet you.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. That kind of, I mean, most people should be clued in.
I hope you do okay in your life.
I hope you find someone, you know, whatever. That should clue you in. But it is so maddening. Like, what Martha's saying is so true. People that go on the fade, or they just start making these weird excuses. And then you're kind of wondering, okay, well, I know they're really busy. Like, then you start making up all these own things in your head about, well, you know, okay, so he hasn't called for 2 weeks, but I know he's busy and he's, you know, whatever. And it's weird because maybe they indicate some interest at first, or you are going out and stuff, and then all of a sudden it just peters out. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to do
And
with
some
that.
Things, frankly, are a slow burn, and they mm-hmm. take a while to figure mm-hmm. out. And I think, you know, I wrote recently about my problem was never under pursuing, it was over pursuing and mm-hmm. being too emotional and too into it on the front end, which mostly had the effect of really terrifying lots of women. but mm-hmm. I think that you need to recognize that there is space to take time to figure things out. And with my wife, we had 5 dates over about 4 months, and they were really spaced out. And a couple of times I'm like, this is so not working. And actually, the day before she accepted our 5th date, which was the date where it became obvious that maybe she had turned a corner, I had written this is obviously isn't working email. I wrote it over lunch at work one day, and I thought, okay, I've written this. I'm going to just let it sit for 24 hours. Wow. And she called that afternoon, and I had called her like 10 days before. I mean, I'd waited a long time for the response. And so, you know, it seemed like it was following the pattern of several other things that have happened in my life right up until the end. And giving it space to breathe sometimes is what's necessary. But again, I think having people to bounce off of, when is it my, you know, responsibility to define something? Or as a woman, if you feel like you've been in something that's undefined for a long time, you know, is there a point at which it's appropriate to say, can we take a time out and talk about what's going on here? And I think a man should initiate that conversation. But mm-hmm. I think if something is ambiguous long enough and you're not getting clarity, mm-hmm. I think there's space for a woman to do that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what about whether male or female, just the general, you know, the sin of omission rather than commission, just the fact that you feel like everyone in your sphere is dating and you're the one that's constantly being passed over, or you've mm-hmm. asked a bunch of girls out and they just constantly say no, and yet your buddy's like going out with someone every different weekend and whatever.
She's always hot
for girl.
Hate that.
Right, because he did do coffee with her and he was like, okay, she's hot enough, so I'll go out with her again.
Exactly.
But no, and then like for girls, it's just like that feeling. It is kind of like a passive rejection, in the sense of just literally, I know single guys, none of them are interested in me. What in the world is up with that?
In college, I didn't really date at all. And I remember my sister asking me, you know, Martha, why do you think that is, that you've never been asked out? And I remember I said to her, I think guys just think I'm already taken, which might sound really prideful, but to me it was like, I don't know. That was my answer. But as I've gotten older, it has become a little bit more of like, okay, maybe I'm too quiet. Maybe I need to flirt more. Maybe I need to have longer hair. Maybe I need to, you know, all these different things. So mm-hmm. it's had maybe a negative effect as I've gotten older. But at the same time, you know, when I've been rejected, you know, after a date or two or something, I just kind of think, your loss, mm-hmm. which is also prideful. But at the same time, like, it's helped me to stay sane a little bit of, okay, you didn't see the value here. I'm going to wait for one who does.
Yeah.
So I think hopefully maybe that can be an encouragement to girls. We have a fine line mm-hmm. there, you know, of don't go too crazy. But it is, I mean, if he didn't see the value, then it wasn't worth it anyway.
Right. I was just telling a friend that the other day, in fact. I said, because a lot of people say, you know, oh, well, don't you have a hard time, you know, still being single and, of course, having to do boundless every day? I mean, it's like now it's just like my... You know, but I have to risk it being part of my identity and stuff. And I always tell them, I say, yeah, I said, but you know what so many women do is they start blaming guys, you know, and they start blaming, oh, well, you know, what's this guy's problem? And why is he so crazy? And why is he such a loser? And he doesn't see me. And I'm like, okay, well, really, we don't want to date those guys anyway. So right. the guys mm-hmm. that we're so angry with and that we think are such jerks or such losers or so passive or whatever, we don't want them. I said, so really, my beef, if it's with anyone, is with the Lord.
Yeah.
So he's the one that I need to go after and be like, Lord, you know, I don't think you've called me to singleness, and I don't think this is my story, so I don't really understand it. But really, how many things about the Lord do we not understand?
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of our life that we don't script, but yet for some reason we think that God owes us an explanation for where we are with singleness. And so I think that for me has been an encouragement, and I try to tell, you know, girls, because we hear from girls at Boundless who are like, I'm 22 years old and I'm still not married, you know, and, you know, part of me just wants to say, oh, bless your heart, you know, you're so young. But at the same time, I remember being 22, and 22 for this girl is as old as she's ever been. And maybe she That's feels right. like her story is just on the way, you know, and I'm like, you know, okay, in 10 years, maybe she'll feel differently, or maybe she'll be married by then or whatever. But I just think that helps, or has helped me in perspective as well.
I think you mentioned really something very important, Lisa. I think it's really important to deal with the anger. Mm-hmm. If there's one emotion that can take root in a way that I think is unhealthy after repeated rejection, it's anger. Because I think if we stay angry long enough, it turns into bitterness. And bitterness is toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And bitterness
and
will...
And unattractive.
And unattractive. Bitterness mm-hmm. will either keep people from asking you out, or they ask you out once and it starts to leak out and you're like, oh, that person is toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard because multiple rejections can leave you really angry, but I think that's an important emotion to deal with God and with other people.
Yeah, it's so true. So... Mm-hmm. Well, thanks everyone for weighing in on this. We'll hear in the inbox, as I said on the front end, specifically how to get through a breakup and how to recover from a breakup. So Jackie Johnson will help us with that. But I think it's good to hear people's stories and realize that at any level of where you've been in a relationship, you know, it's difficult to process and it's difficult to understand. And so I just appreciate you guys being honest with your own stories. So thanks.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Sang my love and said, go love me. Sang my love and said, go love me. Sang my love and said, go love me. Sang my love, sang my love, sang my sweet, sweet love, till I got no love to give. All my love, all my love, all my sweet, sweet love, till I got no love to give. I knew I was in trouble when I seen her on the dance floor. She captivated my heart with just a single glance. Her eyes of chocolate were holding me for ransom. A sweet surrender of my love and my romancing. I knew she was the one when she stole all of my loving. And so I rolled up on the floor and I said, take my love, take my love, take my sweet, sweet love, till I got no love to give. All my love, all my love, all my sweet, sweet love, till I got no love to give. Sing my love, sing my love, sing my sweet, sweet love, till I got no love to give. All my love, all my love, all my sweet, sweet love, till I got no love, till I got no love, till I got no love to give.
Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, we have a new friend in the studio. His name is Dominic Bally. Dominic, welcome to Focus on the Family and the Boundless Show.
Thank you. Stoked to be here.
Very, very fun to have you. Okay, the last person who said stoked in an interview was Bethany Hamilton when we interviewed her about Soul Surfer.
I was just thinking as I said stoked, I was like, I'm not in California or Hawaii right now, but I bet you some of your listeners are.
But you were in Hawaii not too long ago.
I just was. Yeah, I just... like 3 days ago, actually.
Okay. That is very, I'm very jealous. I've never been there, so I don't even want to talk about that. So, moving on. No, I'm just teasing. So, this is going to be a fun interview because it is not often, and by not often, I mean never, that we have had an artist on the show who basically plays reggae.
Right.
Now, okay, so reggae... but then it's like slash something. So
yeah, we call it Cali Rock Reggae. It's basically a big soup of reggae, rock, pop, and hip hop. So we came up with this tagline, Cali Rock Reggae, to help describe it.
That is very fun. Okay, so you have to tell us first of all, I'm digging the dreads.
Thank you.
Okay, how long of a process has this been?
It's been 7.5 years.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Okay, and you are married. I should say you're married and you have a family.
I am married and have a family. And speaking of family, I dreaded my hair the day after my daughter was born. So
So your wife didn't sign up for this when you got married. This was afterwards. This was a discussion you had. She's okay with it?
No, yes. To her credit, she absolutely loves them. Thinks they're hot.
That is awesome.
Which is a good thing.
That is
for
a
my
very
wife
good
to
thing.
Think I'm hot.
That is a very good thing. Well, they're super fun. And I still have to, maybe I'll just have to Google it and just learn the whole world of dreads because I might do it at some point too. I'm going
to
see.
I would love to see that.
I'm going to see what, if Focus has a policy on it. I'm going to check our manual.
I'm sure they do.
You're sure they do. That's good. Okay. Well, you are here for a number of reasons. One, because you have a new album out called American Dream.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks, if you troll around and look for you on Facebook and beyond, you can see that you have a lot going on. As you said, you've been traveling. The album just came out in July, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
July 26th.
Okay. So very fun. Had a chance to take a listen to it a couple times. And in fact, I was telling Martha, you know, as I was listening, I sent her like a track and I'm like, listen to this one. This one's really good. So it was funny. We had a good time doing that. But you kind of have an interesting story in light of how you even got into music in general, and you grew up in California, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about just your background and your story and just, you know, how that came about, because I think it's interesting, your whole, like, especially pivotal in high school,
right?
What happened, and just give us a little bit of that.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a really musical family. My mom plays piano and sings and is a great songwriter, and growing up, there was always music in the house. My brothers and sisters all had great voices and could all sing. I loved to sing and I loved music, but I was legitimately tone deaf my entire life. In fact, we did this children's album when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and my mom, you know, let all the kids sing on it. And so we got in the studio and we all had microphones and we sang, and I learned 8 years later that they actually just muted my mic in the mix down because I was so off pitch. I couldn't sing. And I love to sing, like I said, but I couldn't. And then when I was 16, I came to Christ and I was born again, and He legitimately just healed my ears. I went home after I met Jesus and had an encounter with Jesus, and He saved me. I went home and I picked up my guitar, which I had been, you know, kind of learning how to play for the last couple of years prior to that. And all of a sudden I could hear that I was off pitch for the first time in my life, and I could hear what everybody else around me had told me. You know, I'd try to sing, and people would be like, hey, man, why don't you just stop? I couldn't hear what my guitar would be out of tune, and I couldn't tell. And all my friends who weren't even musicians would be like, man, your guitar sounds bad. Do you need to tune it or something? I'd be like, oh, really? I don't know. I could get a tuner and see, but I can't tell. So for the first time in my life, I could hear pitch, and then I just started singing and writing after that, and it trips me out still to this day when people tell me, you know, I love your voice or you have a beautiful voice. I'm like, man, that's so weird because I couldn't sing for over half my life.
So is your mom going to let you go back and dub your voice back into that kid's album? Because that would just be kind of vindication.
That would be amazing. I did have one track on that album called The Reading Rap, in which I tried to rap. My mom wrote this rap for me, and I just had to like say these few words in these spaces. My sisters would say like 1, 2, and I'd say, how do you do? But I couldn't even do it on time. It was just like talking in the space. And finally, after 3 hours, the engineer just told my mom, hey, Teresa, that's as good as it's going to get. We're not going to get any better. And
oh my goodness. So, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
So what was your family experience then? I mean, growing up in a musical family, and then how, I mean, now you came to faith, or is there any other traces of faith in your family? Or?
Yeah, my parents are believers. And I grew up going to church, you know, and my dad is a pastor. I knew Christ was the only way to heaven. I knew truth, but I loved sin, mm-hmm. you know. And so when I was in junior high and high school, I was like,
we're familiar with that.
Yeah. I used to tell God, hey, God, I'm going to party my brains out until after college. But after that, I want to serve you because I know that's the best way. But honestly, Lord, I want to have a lot of fun right now, and sin's a lot of fun. You know, the Bible says that. It's like sin is fun for a season, but the end of it's destruction. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of like forget about the end of its destruction. It's like, yeah, it's fun for a season, and I'm in the season, and so I'm going to have fun. But when I was 16, the Lord was just beckoning me and relentless in his love for me, and was like, no, dude, I'm not going to let you wait till after college. I want you now. And it was gnarly. You know, I was the quarterback on the football team, and I was a popular kid at school, you know, and I'd be the life of the party at parties playing my guitar and a beer in one hand and a guitar in the other hand. And all of a sudden I came to faith in Jesus, and I couldn't go to those same parties. I tried, you know, I tried just like passing the joint and not smoking, and I just couldn't. It was too hard. And so I'd sit at home on Friday nights just with my Bible and me and alone. And I'm pretty sure that of the 2,000 kids in my high school, I was the only believer at that entire school. And so I went from just having all these friends and having this really hyped life to being super lonely, just as far as socially goes, you know, and just me and Jesus. But like Jesus said,
was this Southern California?
Yeah, it was Palm Springs area.
Okay.
And then
we always have to have people give, you know, where they're from, because then the people that are listening are like, oh, I'm from there. Ah, shout outs, you know, it's important to people. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So then tell us how your interest in this style of music came about. Because I understood, you know, obviously from stuff that I read that you really were into the drums. Then you picked up the guitar, or you never even did get into the drums.
I just became
the guitar. But
yeah, what happened with that, as a just a little side note, and I'll answer your question about the reggae thing. When I was 13, I told my dad, hey, Dad, I really want to play drums, which is funny because I also had no sense of rhythm. Not only was I not, I couldn't hear pitch, I was tone deaf, but
I had
no sense
of rhythm. It's like a walking miracle, I think.
No, for real, My mom trips out still to this day. She's like, of all my kids, you're the only one who's like doing music, and you're the only one who had no musical inclination whatsoever. So I told my dad, I want to play drums when I was 13, and he's like, well, here's the deal. Drums are really loud, and they're expensive, and they take up a lot of room, but if you take acoustic guitar lessons for a year, then I'll buy you a drum set. And I was like, acoustic guitar, man, that's for country singers. I don't want to play acoustic guitar. But nevertheless, I started taking acoustic guitar lessons and fell in love with it, and actually never got a drum set. But to answer your question about the reggae thing, I don't really know where it came from. I can kind of put it back to this one moment in my life when I was in elementary school, and there was a song on the radio called Informer by a guy named Snow. And he had this Jamaican accent, and I didn't know that it was a Jamaican accent. I just knew that I loved it, and I fell in love with the song. I bought the single cassette tape, listened to it every day of my life for at least a year. And every time after that, I'd hear somebody singing with a Jamaican accent or hear like a reggae-ish type thing. I just felt like I was home. And I'm just, you know, I'm just a white dude from California. It's not like I had this culture around me or anything. And my mom is a beautiful singer, but she's like Disney style singer. She's not like a soul singer. She's not like a reggae chick, you know? So after that, it was every time I'd hear reggae, it was like, man, that's me. So when I started to write music, it was kind of just what came out. And I've really seen the Lord use it. You know, it's reggae has its roots in quote unquote spiritual themes, you know, even though it's not necessarily biblical Christian themes, it's always had this like spiritual thing about it. So when I go into a club or some mainstream venue that's, you know, that's not a Christian venue and I'm singing quote unquote spiritual things, I can get away with saying a lot of stuff, quoting a lot of scripture, talking about Jesus in a way that I wouldn't be able to if I was just playing rock music or pop music. So I've really seen the Lord use it a lot.
But you didn't try on the front end, you didn't try to sing with a Jamaican accent, did you? And then someone had to be like, no.
No, I was just like.
Okay, that's good. You just remained.
Yeah, I just did it. You know, I just did do what comes out, you know.
I know Informer. I remember that song.
Oh, good.
I totally remember that song. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's great. So, okay. So you have to tell us how then, I mean, obviously, this isn't like singing pop top 40 or country or one of these big genres. So how did you get, because I know that you've played a lot of stages with a bunch of different acts. How did this come about as far as making this a career and really getting into the scene itself?
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. When I was 18 years old, I was going to Bible college. I was planning on going to school for engineering and producing. I wanted to work in a studio. And when I was 18, God spoke to me. I'm pretty sure audibly, it was so clear. I swore I like saw a vision or something, but he just told me, hey, I want to bless your music and your songs in a way that even the unsaved world wants to embrace it. Cause, the quality is just going to be good. And I was like, what, Lord? I'm not even planning on writing anymore. I'm going to go to Bible college for a couple of years and then go to the Musical Institute in Hollywood. And it totally changed my path, you know? And, I took that word from the Lord and I tried to make it happen myself, and I strove for 3 years trying to make it happen, and it became idolatry to me. The ministry became idolatry. The music became idolatry, and God's not down with idols. And so he tore it down. I thought I'd never do music again. And I kind of gave up. I gave my guitar back to the Lord. I was like, Lord, I don't even want to do this. It was idolatry for me. I just want you. I don't ever want to play music again. I'll bus tables for the rest of my life. And a couple years later, I felt like God just handed me back the guitar and was like, hey, I want to do this. And I was like, no, Lord, I don't want to. Remember, it was idolatry. And I just decided, all right, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to have a tight grip on it. I'm not going to strive. God, if you want to do this, do it. Next thing I knew, all these like mainstream venues were calling me. Ziggy Marley was coming to town, who, you know, is Bob Marley's son. And they asked me to open for him. And it was like, and then we were playing at this festival, you know, in town that was like Jason Mraz and Natasha Bedingfield and Ziggy Marley, and all these little cool little doors just started opening, you know. And I can't really take any credit for it. It was just kind of God doing it, you know. In the entertainment industry, success is so much about being at the right place at the right time, you know, and who you know, which is so cool because the world would call that good luck or chance or whatever, but in all reality, it's just the sovereignty of God. God alone can do that kind of stuff. So any cool thing that's happened, and you know, me sitting here right now with you is really cool for me. And that's just God kind of orchestrating stuff that the way that he wants to for his purpose and his glory.
It's true. What is the most, like when you're out and about, whether you're playing a gig or talking to people, especially people in the audience, what's the most common thing that people want to talk about in relation to your music? When they hear the music, what's the word on the street as far as what people are struggling with, just what you really see as a need that you are speaking into right now?
Gosh, the way I write is, I just kind of pour out my life and what's going on in my life. So it just depends. You know, we played up in Castle Rock, Colorado 2 days ago, and a lady came up to me and said, hey, my whole life, my name is Liberty, and I've known that there was this going to be this thing on my life where I was just going to need to, I was going to need freedom. I was going to need to be free. And my name was going to even speak of like this need to be free. And your song Favela has just been this thing of God kind of pouring over my life and speaking freedom into my life. And so, you know, that. But then 2 weeks ago, an older woman came up to me when we were in Hawaii and was like, hey man, that American Dream song just speaking about that's not what we're living for. The American dream's not what we're living for. We're here created by God for his purpose and his glory. It's just been rocking my life and changing me and flipping upside down the whole way, I think. So it's hard to answer that question. You know, it kind of varies from person to person, which is super cool for me, because not everybody's the same, you know? So it's a blessing to me that my music can speak into so many different people's lives and circumstances.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about obviously being able to be on stages with folks like Ziggy and Jason Mraz and those folks. Your story in light of that is probably not the traditional scene of artists that you see come through these venues. I mean, you're married, you have kids. I mean, how are you able to kind of, you know, marry that story with kind of who you are and what you're doing out on the road? I mean, because it's got to be a little bit countercultural to where you are.
Yeah. You know, it's a trip. When God wants to do something, he just kind of makes a way for it. And my wife and I met each other singing at church. And so we've always kind of had this thing where we sang together, but we'd usually just lead worship together. She didn't usually perform with me. And a couple of years ago, our daughter was about to go into preschool and kindergarten. And we felt like God told us, hey, I want you to homeschooler, you know, so you guys can minister together as a family. And we were like, all right, whatever that means, because I wasn't really traveling much at the time. Before I knew it, we were traveling all over the world. And about a year ago, we finally, my wife, like, joined the quote-unquote band officially and has been singing background vocals with me. And so now we travel with the kids. I have two kids, they're 7 and 3, and we just pick up and cruise. We usually bring a nanny or a grandma or somebody. And it's crazy. I mean, my son's 3.5 years old and he's all boy, so he's like climbing up the windows of the airplanes. And but you know, God makes a way for us to do it. And that, you know, that's my first ministry. My wife, Jesus said, husbands, love your wives. Jesus didn't say that. Paul said it. You know, love your wives like Christ loves the church, not love the church or love the ministry like Christ loves the church. And so being able to minister to them on the road while we're ministering to other people together is huge, huge for us.
Yeah. What would you say, like, in the last 6 months to a year, really the Lord has been teaching you? Because we have, you know, so many, you know, we're an audience of young adults and we're kind of going through so many different stages in life, whether it's career, family, making those kind of big decisions. And, you know, we always talk to people who feel like they're floundering and just really needing to hear from the Lord and stuff, and it's always encouraging to hear what other people are learning.
Yeah, well, prior to 10 months ago, I was on staff at a church as well as doing my music. I was the worship pastor at a church, and on a really practical level, that was really cool because I was at a salary that was consistent, and I didn't have to think a whole lot about money. I didn't have to necessarily walk by faith as far as, you know, our needs going, being met goes. But 10 months ago, the Lord told us, hey, I want you to step out and do full-time music. And I was like, Lord, are you sure? Because have you looked at, like, the books? I can't afford to do this. And God was like, yeah, man, that's the kind of stuff I like to do, because that way I get the credit and I get the glory. And I'm like, but Lord, it doesn't make sense. And he was like, no, I know it doesn't make sense, but I want to do this. And that's kind of how God likes to do stuff sometimes. He likes to stack the odds against him so it's impossible for anybody but him to come through. And so 10 months ago, we just stepped out, and I went off staff at my church and went into full-time music. And, you know, David said, I've been young and now I'm old, and never have I seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging for bread, but in abundance they're filled. And I just want to testify that over the last 10 months, it's been freaky. You know, we didn't have any savings. We had just bought a house the prior year before that. So all of a sudden we had a mortgage and stuff. It's been scary. But God is so faithful. And I would just say to any listeners out there who are feeling like, oh, God wants me to take that step, and you're saying, well, God, you know, part the Red Sea and then I'll walk through. We got to remember the River Jordan when God said, no, you walk through and then I'll part the sea. And the priest went in and started walking because God told him to. And then God parted the River Jordan. It was like that for us. It was like, doesn't make sense, God. And he's like, well, start walking and then I'll make it make sense. And he has. So, there's a song on the album called You Are There, and maybe I'll even share it today, but it just talks about, man, no matter what happens in this life, no matter how high the bills stack, God's not going to leave us or forsake us. He's going to be faithful. So we just got to trust him and step out when he calls us to.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you are going to share a song with us. I do want to just talk briefly here about the album. Again, it's called American Dream. Can I tell you my favorite track?
Yeah, please.
Again and again.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's just my fave.
My mom helped me write the lyrics to that song. Oh. So speaking of my mom, I was stumped.
Okay.
And I called my mom and she helped.
Okay. So I definitely have to give a personal endorsement and shout to that one and tell people to check that one out for sure. But I just love that there's such a variety of style. I mean, it's funny because, you know, when you think of reggae, you think, okay, well, that's what it is.
Right.
But there's such a variety of style within the album as well as the lyrical components. And obviously, American Dream, you're talking about a little bit what you alluded to of how those idols start stacking up and we get blinded to what really we're putting first before mm-hmm. Christ and what it looks like to tear those down and recognize that what we have when it's all over is Christ. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a great testimony, especially how you do that lyrically in that song. And obviously it's resonating with folks. So it's your sophomore project. So mm-hmm. any, you know, kind of distinctions with this one? And then where do you see now that you've kind of crafted this one, where you're going to go from here?
Yeah, it was scary writing this album because my first album, you know, was really well received and it was... There's this thing they call the sophomore slump where you come out with your second record and just kind of sucks. And I was scared, you know, but I feel like God really blessed it. And I don't know if you heard, but it debuted as like the second best-selling reggae album in the world and mm-hmm. the third best-selling Christian album in the world. And so it's been doing super good, which is really cool because I'm totally indie. Like, I'm not on a big label or anything on that. I started my own record label. And so that's been a huge blessing. And stylistically, I really... brought more of a pop thing to this record and mm-hmm. was really able to like Again and Again, that's one of the poppiest tracks on the record. And it was just me. I wasn't trying to write poppy songs. It's just, man, this kind of came out this time. And I think the music on this record is a little bit more accessible than my last record. The most common comment I hear from people is, hey man, I don't even like reggae, but I love your music. And I think the way that kind of God gives me songs is this more accessible way. It's not this super rootsy reggae thing. It's this reggae-ish, pop-ish, rock-ish, hip-hop-ish mm-hmm. thing that allows more people to listen.
That's very fun. Okay, so before you play for us, you have to answer one question, because whenever we have people in the studio who are cool, because I think I'm cool, okay? But I have a lot of, speaking of freakiness.
Thanks for thinking I'm cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, totally. The dreads and all, and you're all, eh. So, I like that. Because, you know, I know that I'm cool, but I definitely have just some closet weirdness. So I need to know, what is one hobby or interest that you have that could completely just slay your reputation as a cool guy? And you're going to put it out right
Wait,
here
Wait, I was
us.
Supposed to say it on this podcast right
yeah.
now.
Yep. I need to know if you wear like tweed suits once in a while. I need to know if you're, you watch The Wiggles. I mean, I love
I'm
it.
I'm trying to think of something embarrassing, which is really weird because, you know, usually don't do that. Usually mm-hmm. hide the things that are embarrassing.
We don't hide here at Boundless. We put it out in the open.
Okay, so you would not think it, but I really love some folk music. And
wow.
some and like bluegrass stuff. When uh-huh. I hear a good folk or bluegrass player,
uh-huh.
I'm digging on it. Which, okay. you know, you wouldn't, with the dreads, you wouldn't
no.
think. But that's
well,
the
and especially with your hostility towards the country and the guitar and stuff. Okay, but I know bluegrass is not
okay,
country.
Okay, and even beyond, I'm just kidding. I don't really tell anybody this, but since you mentioned
but
it,
no, you will.
When I'm flipping through the stations sometimes, and I hear a country station, first of all, I make sure nobody's in the car with me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I leave it on.
Okay.
But I mean, it's because I really appreciate the songwriting a lot. And that's my excuse. It's not because I like the music. I swear.
Okay. Okay, well, one day if we see you up on stage in a tight pair of Wranglers,
nope.
you're going to be like, something happened to him.
Nope.
Hey, we don't know. We don't know what the Lord may do, Dominic.
Oh,
I'm
Lord,
just saying.
Help me.
So,
please never.
All right. Well, fantastic talking to you. I want to make sure everyone knows. You can go to Dominic, and that's Dominic without a K, so mm-hmm. with a C, Bally, BALLI.com, to get all the info on him, to listen, sample the album, get bio info on him, figure out where in the world he is, probably Hawaii again in another week. Goodness gracious, whatever. But make sure you check it out. The album is American Dream, and he is going to give us a little bit of a live acoustic flavor of it.
Yeah.
All right.
Song's called You Are There, and it sounds like this. I know you are there, you are there no matter where life goes. You are there, you are there. Tick tock, the clock stops for no one. This crazy rat race is no fun. Hold on, I wanna stand strong, but I ain't got no strength left to stand on. Bill stack on my back, I'm nervous. Please someone carry these burdens. Lonesome, feeling abandoned, but you said you'd never leave my side. I know you are there no matter where life goes. You are there, you are there. I know you are there no matter where life goes. You are there, you are there. There's simply no need, need for a chalice, simply beats and melodies. Remember the ease, don't defeat these enemies, they die. Die, he said, but it don't bother me at all. They fall, we stand tall. The oppressor's bowing down again. He's coming around again. I found him, I got us ready to brawl. He's ready to get quick, quick. But everybody to cause, no matter the hurt and the insert, no matter the burden. Remember the promise they're making on all of it, even though it's none of this day. Yeah, yeah. I know you are there. You are there no matter where life goes. You are there, you are there. I know you are there, you are there no matter where life goes. You are there, you are there, you are there, you are there, are there, Lord, you are there. Well, some days the doubts may surround us, distracting like sirens sounding the loudest, trying to clown this. But we ain't got no reason to doubt this, 'cause after the valleys and mountains, rest comes and peace like a fountain. This word keeps me grounded, this word keeps me grounded. I know you are there no matter where life goes. You are there, I know you are there no matter where life goes. You are there, you are there. Da 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 da.
Woo! Okay, I think we got a little Pentecostal there for a minute there. That was great. Very, very fun. So there you have it, folks. There is a taste from the new album, American Dream. Such a pleasure to have you in the studio with
us. So good to be here.
Thank you so much. And when you're back in Colorado, you got to stop by again.
Absolutely.
Because I want to see another 4 inches on those dreads. That's what I'm saying.
You got it.
Okay. So very fun. Thanks for being part of the Boundless Show.
Thanks for having me.
I suddenly found myself drifting far from the shore. I was carried away much further than I'd ever gone before. I thought I'd need some better. My heart started beating for empty pleasure, but all I needed was you. Now it's only you. You're all that I want. 'Cause I found in you my treasure. True. Oh,
right, everyone. We are opening up this week's inbox and a great question from someone on breakups. And with us to answer the question is Jackie Johnson. She is a friend and the author of When Love Ends and the Ice Cream Carton is Empty. So she knows about breakups. She's been through them and she's going to answer this. And here's our question. Welcome, Jackie, by the way.
Thank you, Lisa. It's good to be here.
Great to have you. All right. This listener is saying, with every relationship in my past, the breakup was a harsh and bitter time for both of us. With the first one, I was the one dumped. With my next two relationships, I was the one who broke things off. Both guys took it hard and nasty things were said by all parties involved. Is there a mature, healthy, and godly way to break up with someone and deal with the repercussions afterwards?
Well, first of all, I'm really sorry that this listener had to go through such a hard time. I know breakups can be hard. As a matter of fact, they're pretty much always hard, mm-hmm. no matter if you're the breakupper or the breakupee, mm-hmm. you know, the person that's dishing it out or the person that's receiving it. But the main thing to remember is that you have choices in how you break up and how you get over it. You don't have to let your feelings overwhelm you. Some of the things that have really helped me when I've gone through an ending of a dating relationship is, you know, first of all, have the courtesy to end it in person. Don't text them. Don't Facebook them. Don't call them unless maybe they live on the other side of the United States. But I've had guys
don't
that
go on the fade.
Yeah.
That's another. Don't just not break up.
Right. Yeah. Yes. That's mm-hmm. just that's the hardest happened. To get over. But I've even had guys, you know, break up with me on email and it's not right. It's seriously. I mean, it's courteous, you know, and really the main things to remember in a breakup are the things you'd remember in any kind of relationship, which is, you know, speak the truth in love. Be kind, be tactful, be respectful, be courteous. I mean, those are things that, you know, we should expect of each other as Christian brothers and sisters, but especially after a dating relationship end. And one thing that's really key is make what you say I-centered, not you-centered. Like, for example, you know, people would say, well, you always do this or you always do that versus I feel like I'm going in another direction. Mm-hmm. So you're pointing it at you kind of thing. And then also respect yourself enough not to grovel, not to plead, not to beg for this person to take you back. I mean, if God is in control and if he is a God of providence and sovereignty, he's going to be leading you in your dating relationship. So you can trust that. And that will give you a lot of peace to let go and let God, you know, bring healing.
That's good. So what would you say, you know, obviously you gave some great examples there of just things to say, things not to say. Just quickly, Jackie, tell us how much of an explanation has to be given to a person? Because I know some people that are like, they're going to go back and forth like it's some kind of legal inquisition about, you know, you did this to me and what, you don't deserve to break up with me, whatever.
Right.
So I want to hear that. And then really, once it is over, where do they go from here? Is there like a specific time period that this person should expect to have to heal from this? Or, you know, some people would just say, just get over it or move on to the next person. What really should be involved in that?
You know, that's a really good question, Lisa. I would say keep it short and to the point mm-hmm. because the longer it goes, the more it's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. I think you can be direct. I think you can speak the truth in love, but you don't have to go on and on about every single thing that person has done to hurt you or has wronged you. And that's the whole thing about that phrase. I mean, it's overused, but it's the bottom line. Speaking the truth in love is A, the truth, and B, love. The truth is, here's what's happening with me and how it's affecting me. You don't have to tell the person, you know, I hate that you wear pink or whatever. You know, you can be truthful, but you can also be tactful mm-hmm. Too. And the thing is with breakups, okay, so there's the breaking up part and then the getting it over part. Mm-hmm. But the breaking up part, I think it should be short, mm-hmm. short and to the point and mm-hmm. just be kind and respectful.
Yeah. And then, so now you have broken up. How do you heal? What does that process look like? What should you look for? Any kind of signs? How can you best do it in a healthy and God-honoring way?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to remember in a breakup is there's what happened and how you respond to what happened. So you have choices of how you're going to feel and what you're going to do with your emotions. You could spiral down into this thinking of no one's ever going to like me, I'll never find anyone again, you know, God is punishing me, which is so destructive, mm-hmm. versus saying, you know what, God is in control and he has a plan for my life and things are going to get better. Well, you don't go from point A to point B automatically. It's like a journey. You journey from the darkness of your sadness into the day. So you kind of go through the stages, which are, you know, twilight, the relationship's ending, like the day is ending. Night is a time of grieving. Dawn is the awakening of hope. And then day is, okay, I can do this. You know, I'm back in the light again. So there is a set of, you know, stages that go with it. The problem is so many people stuff their emotions or hide them or feel like they don't have a right to cry or anything. But one thing I want to say, especially to singles, is that your pain is valid. So many people say, well, you weren't married, so, you know, how hard can it be to get over someone? Mm-hmm. And you go, really? Mm-hmm. Can I own this pain? Mm-hmm. So I want to say to you, if you're out there and you're single and you've never been married and you're going through a breakup, or even if you have been married and you're dating again, your pain is valid. It's as valid as someone who's going through a divorce because your heart was in it. And we were not designed for this whole attachment and detachment thing. So So let me give you that. Your pain is valid.
That's good. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for weighing in on this. I think that is so true. And those of us that have been through a breakup know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, yeah, you can't put a time frame on it. You can't say, oh, well, you only dated 6 months, so you should feel this way, or you only dated a year, so now you can feel this way, or whatever. But I think it's great. And to acknowledge the fact that breakups do happen, it is difficult. And really, there is grief involved, but also that day will eventually come. So thanks so much for weighing in on this. Again, Jackie is the author of When Love Ends and the Ice Cream Carton is Empty. So good thoughts there if you want to get a fuller picture, really, that has a lot of her own experience in it as well. Just a great, helpful book if, in fact, this is your current experience. So, well, that is it for this week's show, everyone. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can address your question on a future show. And in the meantime, you know, recognize that all of these stages, things that we're going through, the questions that we answer here, someone is experiencing them and you may experience them somewhere down the road. So do listen in and let us know what you would like us to address in the future. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.